You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, let me be honest with you. I always thought representation matters was just a phrase people used to sound and look relevant until I watched The Good Doctor. There was something about Dr. Sean Murphy, a brilliant surgeon who also happens to be on the autism spectrum, that shifted something in me. It wasn't just the storytelling, it was the understanding. For the very first time ever, I understood Ubonga. Bonga was a boy from my neighborhood growing up where we were terrified of him as kids. His behavior was strange to us. He was erratic, unpredictable. No one explained anything, so we gave him a label. We said he was dangerous, but he wasn't. He was just different. And we didn't have the language or the compassion to understand what he was living with. Watching The Good Doctor made me see him in a new light. It made me see myself differently too, how quickly we are to fear what we don't understand, and how powerful it is when media, advocacy, and representation meet. It gave me a new appreciation for people living with autism, their brilliance, their courage, their humanity. And today, I get to honor that appreciation with one of the most meaningful conversations I will possibly ever have. It's Autism Acceptance Month, and I am joined by a mother, a warrior, and a truth teller, Irene Mtendra. She's the mother of Zegwande, a remarkable young man who is non-speaking but far from silent. Together, they are building the Zegwande Foundation, a movement rooted in dignity, equity, and the simple but radical idea that non-speaking does not mean non-thinking. They are changing the way South Africa sees, understands, and advocates for non-speaking autistics. And today, we get to listen, to learn, and to expand. Let's begin. Good evening, Mrs. Mtendra. It's such a great honor to have you here tonight.
A very warm good evening, Bume, and thank you for that introduction. And may I also extend my greetings to your listeners as well.
Are you well tonight?
I'm very well, ma'am. Thank you. And hope you are well too.
I am very, very well. Thank you. I'd love to start with the heart, your family. So if you don't mind, please tell us a little bit about who you are, what motherhood has taught you, and how Zegwande's journey has shaped the woman you are today.
Okay, so Irene Mtendra is a mother, is a wife, yes, is a professional woman, and so I do all sorts of things. I juggle all the responsibilities. Obviously, we become sisters, we become daughters-in-law, we become aunts, and that kind of a thing.
Yes.
But I think one has had a remarkable journey of raising three kids, and one of them happened to be a child in the autism spectrum.
Yes.
It has been a very long and tough journey, I must say, very grueling, but also very rewarding. There's a lot that one has learned through this journey. You learn to appreciate diversity.
Yes.
You learn to understand your child when you finally have a conversation with him, a very robust conversation about your child, asking you, why did you do that to me when I was growing up? And when he said reflecting on him before he started, he talks using a letterboard, actually. So he does not speak. We call him non-speaking, not non-verbal, okay? Because he says he has got the vocabulary, he has got the words, he's got language, many languages, but he just cannot put the words in his mouth. So when he started speaking, he questioned me, actually. I was terrified when an autistic child finally says, why did you do that intervention? Why did you do that? I said, no, I was trying to help you. He said, some of these things were very much unnecessary, because you guys just did not understand who I am and wow. how God created me. And I look back and I thought, like, had I known, you know. So I've learned quite a lot from him. He inspires me a lot. He is he's highly matured, highly intelligent. He yeah. calls himself a very highly intelligent.
Oh, I love that.
And then he says, you know, he has got a very big vision. And actually he says it is not autism that actually frustrates him. Mm. It's the world and people around him, just yes. how they look at him, how they perceive him. Autism to him is not even an issue. It's not an answer. He's not concerned about that. That is him.
That is but so just, profound.
So that's him. So though I've learned a lot, quite a lot from him.
Mm. And I just want to find out, before Uzegwande was born, did you know anything about autism or the spectrum?
No, absolutely nothing yeah. whatsoever. I did not know anything. I did not anticipate anything. All the visits to the doctor were fine, were yeah. perfect. The baby was growing very well, and he was born a very handsome young man. And then a couple of things were picked up. Actually, I must say, my mother-in-law and my sister-in-law were the first ones to pick a few things.
Okay.
And you know, when it comes from that angle, you pick up judgment yes. immediately.
Yes.
So, and I thought, like, you know what, now I'm being judged that my child cannot do this.
Yes.
And my mother-in-law is a nurse by profession, so she knows the developmental milestones. So she was like, you know, at this age, this child is supposed to be doing that, and he's not doing it.
Mm.
And you need to teach him how to do this.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I'm now in deep trouble. And fast forward, we took him to a doctor. He must have been 2.5. We took him to the doctor.
Mm.
But in between, whilst we were waiting for the appointment, I started doing a whole lot of research.
Yeah.
I read. I've never read so much.
Of course.
About a subject in my life. And I'm a researcher by profession, but I can tell you, I've never read so much about a subject. And I put my facts in order. I prepared for that meeting with the doctor. It was the worst ever consultation, because I was told, or rather we were told with his father, that this child is autistic,
yeah,
and find an institution and keep him in an institution, because you're not going to be able to live with him. He's not gonna understand. He does not understand the world around him.
No,
you know, those kind of things.
And I can imagine for parents who've already got two children, you think you've got parenting on lock, right? You know how to do this thing. And then you're introduced to a different way of parenting that you've never even heard of before.
Absolutely, absolutely. But just to finish my last point,
yeah.
then this young man meets the doctor at the age of 14. He is now talking. He met the doctor at 2.5.
Mm.
Then he gets to meet this doctor at the age of 14.
Mm.
The first conversation that he has with the doctor is, you are going to withdraw your words of medical advice to my parents because
Ooh.
You were wrong about me.
Oh, that hit me as if I'm the doctor.
Yes. He tells the doctor, this is where we're starting. Please withdraw your words of... I was sitting there, I was shivering, literally shivering. I thought, like, there's going to be a war here.
Yes.
There's going to be a war. And the doctor had to apologize. And later on, I'm like, but Papa, you met this guy when you were 2.5.
Yes.
I remember this guy. This is the guy that was supposed to have given you hope, but he didn't. He was wrong. He lied. So when I say I've learned a lot from my son, those are some of the things that I cannot explain. I mean, I can't remember at 2.5 who I met, who said what to my parents.
Yes.
I can't tell you.
Oh, my goodness. And I love that you're saying Uzegwande is more than just your son. He's also your teacher. And I think at this point, I'd love for you to teach us a thing or two about the autism spectrum, and particularly the non-speaking autism where Uzegwande sits.
Okay, firstly, I want to say at the moment, at least what we know is that there is no cure about autism.
Okay.
With us, we did a whole lot of things. I can mention a whole lot of interventions.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, we nearly found ourselves living in the street, because as a parent, you just want to do everything to the best of your ability.
Yes.
So that one day you look back and say, look, I tried.
Mm.
So if parents are looking for a cure, there is no cure.
Sure. Okay.
Secondly, what I want to say is, I think if you invest in putting a routine for a child that is autistic, that is your biggest win. Yeah. But it's very difficult because this world is very chaotic that we live in. I mean, you never know what time you're going to wake up tomorrow, unless you have got a clock, and how you're going to do whatever. So we invested quite a lot in terms of, you know, putting the Gwande to routine. So as a result, he's 18 years old now. So the young man wakes up every day, same time. It doesn't matter whether it's winter, summer, holiday, we are in the house or out of the house.
Yes.
He wakes up every day, same time, not clock. He wakes up by himself.
Wow.
He does certain things by routine, by, like, I can tell you, there's no like I'm doing one, I'm doing five, I'm going to go back to two.
Mm-mm.
He just does them like that.
Mm.
So throughout the day, again, we have taught him certain chores in the house.
Yes.
Where he packs the dishes, he does this, and we don't need to tell him. So he's very handy. So all of that, and again, in the evening, it doesn't matter whether there is guest in the house, there's a party in the house, 7 o'clock, he takes his meds by himself, he goes to bed.
Yes.
You can continue with your program, but his day is done. So routine is very important. Why? Because it creates predictability around them.
And some normalcy.
Exactly. Yeah. So they know what is going to happen.
Yeah.
Again, you said about the non-speaking.
Mm.
So children that are non-speaking, it doesn't mean they're non-comprehending.
Mm-hmm.
Please presume competence when you engage them, because these people, they've got a mind. My son says autism is a body-mind disconnect. He says his brain is very much intact, but his body is just failing
to keep up.
The body is just failing me, but my brain is very much intact. So presume competence when you deal with them, when you interact with them. They want to be respected. They want to be seen as these clever children that they are.
And they are really
capable
brilliant.
Of doing a whole lot of things.
Mm.
So the things that we say around them, how we treat them, so on and so on, it's very important.
Mm.
And there's just one thing that I cannot explain. I mean, you walk into my house, listen for me, if you don't embrace autism, or you don't embrace, you know, diversity, my child just picks it up immediately.
Whoa.
And if you walk into my house and you're a warm person, you sit down, the one will come and he will sit next to you and he will offer you some juice. And he might cuddle a little bit. But if you are a very cold person, I can tell you my son will just move away from the space. He won't interact. He won't. So we already know I can pick up personalities of people just by people coming into my house, how they interact with the one and how he responds. That, you know what, you are a warm person. This child can be with you. Or you are a little bit of a cold person. Mm-hmm. Then so there's a lot that we can learn. We can learn from them. And the other thing again is that they have got a defined purpose in life.
Mm.
All these children that are autistic, and I'm speaking for them, and I'm not talking just about my son, I'm talking about a whole lot. I've interacted with Lise, Di, Aka, Adash, all of those kids, and many others that are non-speaking. They are very clear. You ask them, what do you want to do? They tell you. Yako said to me, I want to do agriculture. Aka says, I want to do advocacy like Zegwandi. The other one says, I want to do this and that. So I think these are people that can contribute meaningfully to the society if we understand them, if we bring them into the play.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very articulative. I mean, sometimes my son, when he writes words that I go to the dictionary. And this is the child that we never actually taught him the phonics of English in terms of, you know, a book or read. He says he has long read. He has read a lot of books just by merely looking at them, browsing through. He is reading a book, he understands a whole lot of things. So, like you were talking about the good doctor, their ability just to absorb and understand the world around them is just amazing. But how we are not picking up on that gift, and how we're not tapping into that depending on how what contribution they can make into the space, I think we are losing out in a big way.
Oh man, you are taking me to so many places, because there was a day I was invited to preach at some church, right? And there was this kid who was making a very funny sound. And if you're new to the church, it's kind of irritating. You don't know why the kid is making that sound. But I was quite intrigued. And so I had a conversation with the dad and I said, hey, I've been hearing your son make the sound. What is it about? What is going on? And the dad says to me, oh, my son is autistic. And immediately, it's like lights went out in my head, because I was just so intrigued to hear what he's going to say about his son, because of what I've come to learn from the good doctor. And what this guy says is, my son is a genius. He does music like nobody I've ever seen. He picks up on things. He sees things we don't see, and not in a way that the son is deranged or anything like that. But they're able to recognize things and create things that are so out of this world. And without trying to sound like I'm glorifying the disability, there's actually something so supernatural about the spectrum. At least every child I know on the spectrum is some sort of a genius.
Agreed. Very much agreed.
You know, you've been teaching us so much about how you've been navigating your day-to-day with Uzegwande, right? And it got me wondering, how did the idea of the foundation actually come about? And what was the fire that made you move from private love to public advocacy?
So here is Uzegwande. Just at that time when he also met the doctor that diagnosed him, he was 14. He was at a school.
Yes.
We call it Sisu Hub School in Pretoria. I get to be called by the school principal and his speech therapist. They said Uzegwande requested that you must come and have a meeting with the principal and the speech therapist. He wants to talk to you. No, he has not spoken to anyone about this. Mm. So I come into the school and I thought, oh my God, I'm in trouble.
What happened?
Mm. So I asked the principal, is there, because you know when you have got a child that is autistic, the first thing that you do, but at that time Uzegwande was doing very well, so I wasn't concerned. Mm. But I asked the principal, do you know what is it about? She says, I don't know.
Yeah.
This is your son's meeting. I said, okay, no, that's fine.
Mm.
I drive into the school, and then I get there, and then we sit down, and then my son starts talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
Then he says, Mom, I am 14. I'm going for 40. I want to ask you, please, I want to leave school. I want to start doing work on advocacy on autism, because there's a lot of misrepresentation about us out there.
He said, so I'm 14, like, going to 40.
Yeah, he said he was 14, he's going for 40. We said, no, don't worry, I'm 14, I'm going for 40.
Okay.
And I said, why? Then he said, look, I've interacted with a lot of doctors, speech therapists, and this and that. And unfortunately, these people have never been autistic.
Mm.
So their understanding of autism is very much skewed.
Yes.
I think there is a gap out there that I should fill in. So at that time, by the way, I need to say that he was also doing counseling for parents at the school. So if a new parent came in, and they would talk to the principal, and then they would, and the principal actually asked me, which he still does even today.
Mm-hmm.
And then he will just take the parents through about autism and explain how brilliant their children are, how they could feed their children, and so on and so on. So he's a very huge draw card for the school, not for kids to come to that school, but for parents, new parents to understand autism.
Yes.
So then I said to him, look, how are we going to do this? Because advocacy means engagement, means you're going to be in the social platform, means you're going to be engaging. And I warned him, because I'm a bit of a shy person.
Yes.
Then I said to him, you know, the world out there is very rough. It really doesn't care whether you're disabled or what.
Mm-hmm.
So firstly, the people that are not going to agree with you, doctors are not going to agree with you, because what they know about autism and what you're doing, they're just going to tell you that you're not autistic.
Mm.
You're playing games, because they've never seen anything like this.
It doesn't tell you what they've learned. Yes.
Yeah, what they have learned in school and what you're saying. And they're going to ask you, what is the science? My son said, Mom, I am ready for that.
Oh, man.
No one is better placed to do that than me.
Oh, man. You spoke about purpose earlier. This is exactly it. He was being called in that moment.
Absolutely. Oh. He said, I'm ready. I'm prepared. If that is a fight I need to fight, then so be it. Mm. So I said, you're going to be in the radio. You're going to be in the media. Mm. People are going to criticize you. He said, you know what? If anybody has never lived the life of autism, let them come, unless they are autistic themselves. Ooh. Then it's going to be a different conversation. Yes. But anybody else who's not autistic cannot tell me anything about autism. Mm. I'm living that life myself.
Mm.
So then that's how the foundation came through. Then I said to him, no, it's fine. So what we will do is we will create a foundation for you. Then you're going to do advocates. Then I asked him, so when people ask you, what is the purpose of this? He says, to fight for the human rights of non-speaking autistic and facilitate access to communication. He said those two things. He said, I want to fight for the human rights of non-speaking autistic and to facilitate education, access to education and communication. So those were the two things that broadly he mentioned. That's what he wanted. So that was the birth of Segwande Foundation. It was never my idea. It was never my idea. Yeah. It's something I never thought of. It was his idea. He was very clear, even conceptualizing the values, the vision, the everything of the organization. I never had a say. He just did it himself.
It sounds to me like he's fighting for visibility in a world that often doesn't even know what to look for. So I'm curious, how do you guys, you and him alike, and everybody else in the foundation actually, how do you generate community support when there's so little understanding of non-speaking autism?
So, like I indicated earlier on, in the school where he was, he's contributing in terms of, you know, doing counseling with parents. And it helps a lot because then the principal is not the one to tell parents, to tell parents it's an autistic child that is actually talking to them.
Yeah, the principal would just sound like a salesperson.
Yes, the principal just is there and they can tell them about the facility and this and that. But here is a child that is autistic that is telling the parents, that is giving them, you know, meaningful hope about their children. And then we work with quite a number of organizations locally and internationally. Just about 3 weeks back, he was doing a presentation in Nigeria where he was invited to talk about you know, autism from a perspective of an autistic, but also locally, because charity begins at home, you know.
Sure.
We are in Pretoria. There is he works with the popular public school in Pretoria, which is UNICA. He's a former student there. But there is also an organization called Autism Ekasi as well. I think they just got a membership of about 700 parents and so on. So he engages and he also posts there. And so he does quite a number of things. And and he engages parents and so on around.
You know, Marine, just being sick, having a flu or having whatever illness can be costly if you don't have medical aid. And even if you do, right, it can be costly to be sick. And now I'm thinking, with all the requirements of special needs, is this not a financially taxing journey? And I'm thinking about somebody who right now might be listening to this and they've got an autistic child or an autistic sister, and they're thinking of supporting them and really walking the journey with them and making sure that they have everything they need at their disposal. Is it not a difficult journey to walk financially?
Mpume, it's an extremely draining financial. It is extremely draining financial. It's when I say it's extremely, I mean like really extremely.
You're not exaggerating.
So I'm not exaggerating. Oh. And what makes it even more difficult is because it's a spectrum disorder kind of a thing. So what worked for me may not work for another person. So it's an individual journey of navigating and finding out. And parents are alone.
I can tell you,
parents are literally alone. So my heart really goes out to parents that come from very disadvantaged background. It also goes out to parents that are in rural communities where they don't even have access to information, let alone the resources and so on. So I would really want to encourage parents to make sure that with the little that government is doing in terms of access to, you know, the grants, you try that. And those that within the tax bracket, make sure that you claim from SARS in terms of disability. And so it's really tough. It's if I think about all the things that we did for Zegwande, at some point we were really at the at the brink of, we're gonna live in the street now. Now we're gonna live in the street. So everything stopped being a priority. Everything just stopped. So what was priority was just living in the house and buying food. Everything else just came to a standstill. But what is also important is for the non-speaking autistics, what I would encourage parents, if they can, and that's what the Zegwande is working towards, making sure that as we are looking for funding, he wants to get most of these non-speaking autistic children onto the program of communicating, because once they communicate, then they are free. The frustration of living with a child that is crying, you don't know what they're crying for because they can't tell you, and so on and so on, then it gets minimized. So I would encourage that, that perhaps might be one of the things that parents, you know, consider and invest in. The many other things that we did a lot, Sitimpume. And as I say, the young man one day asked me, why did you do that?
But it's the best thing you knew to do at that point.
I did not know anything. And then he said, I remember, Papa, I think that day you held a meltdown. And he said to me, that was not a meltdown. It's because I just wasn't agreeing with you and those doctors. What you were doing to me, it was torture. I did not like it.
Could he not write?
No, no. At that time, that the methodology for writing was not there in the country. So we had not been introduced. The spelling to communicate came to South Africa in 2017. We went for the training and this and that. That was before then. So he could not write. So he could not do anything. So anything that he disagreed with, he said, I was going to fight. And the fight was not going to go well, because I just did not like some of the things that you guys were doing. And some of them were painful. So financially, it's quite a draining journey. And I hope one day, the government come to the rescue of parents. I mean, many parents cannot even find space, let alone the financial, just find space to get their kids into school. Because the waiting list is, in one school, I'm told that they have got 5 years waiting list. Yes, 5 years, you're on the waiting list and it's 5 years. So in the meantime, what do you do?
What do you do? Because the child is growing.
The child is growing and is missing out. And the more they are not exposed to schooling, the more they're not exposed to any form of therapy and so on. And because we are also not trained as a society, as parents, as communities to interact with them, it just makes life even more difficult. It makes life even more difficult.
The more you're speaking, the more I'm thinking back at Ubonga, you know, the guy I mentioned in the introduction. Ubonga would make sounds and they would not be anything understandable to us as kids anyway. And he was so violent and he would hit us and we'd run away. And I'm thinking now that maybe that was the frustration that you're talking about, that I can't communicate in the way I'd want. He probably wanted to play with us, but because he can't say what he wants to say, we don't understand, and he hits us and we have to run away. And I can imagine the frustration that pents up in the body of an autistic person, because like you said earlier, I'm fully capable. My mind is sharp, it's working. But my body is failing me. I can't seem to translate what's in my mind and my body.
So I think that's what my son said when we finally got to sit down and have a conversation. And when he started talking, he was very much calm, and he appreciated how we, even the how we treated him changed. Because remember, we knew this child, that is this child.
Yeah.
And the day he started communicating, things around my house changed completely. Then we started talking to him, started engaging him. What do you want to eat? Yes. How do you want this, this and that? And I think he just appreciated that. But also he indicated that, you know, when things change quite abruptly, it frustrates him. When we don't communicate with him, when we don't tell him, when we take him for granted, when we treat him like he's some stupid guy and this and that, that he doesn't like and that he's going to fight. So I do agree with you that to a great extent, I think Monga was trying to express something that nobody understood. So imagine yourself if your mouth is, you've got a tape on your mouth, your hands are tied, you want to say something, but nobody is giving you attention. You want to move. Every part of your body is tight and you want to move. You're going to fight.
Of course.
Yeah, you're going to fight. You want to talk. You want to do something. Every part of your body, how else are you going to communicate? You can communicate. You want to communicate, but you don't have the means to communicate. And people are busy, you know, disrespecting you, undermining you, calling you names, running away from you. And yeah.
Oh, man. The work you and Uzegwande are doing is educational, it's revolutionary, and it's very deeply personal. How do you come up with new ways to shift awareness but still protect your peace in the process?
I think it has come with time. It was not easy at the beginning. Now that one has been doing this, and I think for me, it becomes even much easier because I know I've got the support of Uzegwande. So, so he tells me every time I give him feedback whenever I do these conversations. And he tells me, well done, Mama. I think you now you know what you're talking about. So I think with time, one has found some level of peace. But I must say that it hits me certain days, but not as much as it used to be in the past because I ask myself, Lord, why me? Yes. Why did I have to find myself here? Yes. But I don't, but I think I've moved from questioning God to accepting the responsibility that he gave me. And that, and I always say, I really thank God that I've seen the goodness of the Lord in
the land of the living.
If I left this world and I said I've never seen God's miracles, I'd be really lying. In my son, I think. He has really revealed himself. If you look at where we come from, how difficult the journey is.
Yes.
Now that I'm sitting with a child that says, this is my life's purpose. I want to do this. I mean, I'm 50. I'm 51. Mrs. Mpume. I don't know what's my purpose in life. I'm here to find my purpose. And there was a 16-year-old, a 14-year-old when he started. He said, this is my purpose. And I'm like, what is my purpose, by the way? I think I got it out, you know?
Oh, man. I want us to talk about expectation versus reality. When you started out this journey, what did you think it would be like? And what has surprised you along the way?
Can you repeat that again?
I want us to talk about it, expectation versus reality, right? When you started this journey, because you had no idea what it was, what did you think it would be like versus what actually surprised you along the way?
So immediately after the diagnosis, I knew it was going to be an uphill battle.
Okay.
Because the doctor just told us that the advice that I'm giving you is to take this child, put him in an institution because you're not going to live with him. So imagine when somebody tells you about your child that this is not a human being that you're not going to be able to live with.
And
so
this is not just a human being. This is my son that I love.
This is my son.
I bore him. We were waiting for him, praying for him.
Exactly. And so I just knew that it was going to be difficult.
Yeah.
And then with time, I just said to myself, because immediately after the diagnosis and so on, and things were like now really happening, you know, we were not able to go into restaurants because it was very much destructive and everybody was just looking at us. We went to the shops with him. It was draining. Just to go and grab some bread. When you come back, you feel extremely exhausted because this child was crying, was doing this and that. Everybody was just looking at you. or he was offending people. If you walked into a restaurant, we'll just grab a Coke from anyone.
Oh,
by the time you apologize, it's too late. By the time you walk past tables and somebody has got a glass of Coke, he just grabs.
No.
By the time you apologize, by then it's too late. And people are shouting at you and people are doing this and
because
that.
Because what kind of mother are you? Your child is so rude.
No, you're failing to read the child,
and
you're not supposed to be interacting with humans. That's inhuman. It's not disrespectful. It's inhuman. What is happening? So it was difficult, and it was extremely difficult, and there was so much of stress, I think, between me and the father, because we didn't know the way forward. I mean, visiting family was difficult. You stood there, you see the one, this age mate, they're playing, they're doing this, and you have to be like looking after your son like every minute, because you don't know what would happen to him and whether he has offended other kids or whether he has offended other parents. So birthday parties, those kind of things, none whatsoever. So the normal things that we go through as parents were cut with him.
Yes.
They were completely cut. We couldn't do those things. And as we were facing the reality. But I really just want to say, in hindsight, with this journey and what God has revealed in us, it has been amazing, extremely amazing. I mean, like I said, I've got three kids. And if you ask me today, Irene, amongst the three kids, who is the child that if anybody came in and say, you know, can I take this child for a week or whatever so you can rest? The one day, surprising enough, as opposed to the other two. Because he's a well-mannered guy.
Oh, man.
He's a well-predictable guy. And he behaves himself. He's very respectful and this and that.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying my other kids are not like that, but they're like you and I. They eat and live, they play there. You get what I'm saying?
Yes.
Nobody will tolerate that. They wake, they get into the house, they just take their shoes everywhere. The guy doesn't do that. He's structured. He's highly structured, very respectful, very this and that. So as opposed to earlier on where I was worried that if I die, what would happen to those kids? I think the conversation is like, what would happen to the other two? This one, if there's a roof above his head and there is food, he'll probably be fine because he's a very strong, emotionally, he's very strong and he's very empathetic, you know. And the other two, obviously, they are doing well in their own spaces, but comparatively speaking, I found my son to be more matured for his age.
Yeah. Sure. You spoke about hindsight just now, and they say it's a brilliant teacher. But in this case, or from this conversation, we've learned that more brilliant than hindsight is Uzegwande himself. And so I want to ask you, if you could go back to day one of this journey, what would Uzegwande tell you to do differently? What are the things that frustrated him that he would have wanted you to do differently?
Well, I think what he would have wanted me to do differently, one, is to see him as autistic and that God has created him that way, and to start questioning that part. He does not like it. Secondly, I think he would want me to consult with him in everything that I do so that I just don't think for him and do things for him. He doesn't like that.
Yeah.
So he needs to be part of a discussion. He needs to be involved. He needs to know what is going on in his life to be engaged and so on. So I wouldn't have made some of the things which I call interventions and which he called, no, that was unnecessary, you know. Had you been able to talk to me, I would have told you that this is not going to work. So I think mainly those are the two things that if I were, and just to accept him, I think for him what is very important is to accept him, to appreciate him, and to also help him because he says this is life purpose, and to help him make other people understand that he is brilliant, that he takes himself very seriously. He wants to be known as somebody that is brilliant and as somebody that has got, you know, the vocabulary, the language, the articulation, you know, all those kind of things. And he's very proud of himself. So he doesn't want to be undermined at all.
You said something that I've never heard in the same sentence or in the same breath as disability. God created me this way. When we think about disability, we often think there was a mistake. This chromosome and that and that. You know, it's always, had we looked at the scans, we would have seen that this wasn't okay. But to hear, God created me this way. There was no mistake here. This was purposed from the very beginning. That is very profound.
Very, very profound. In fact, what Zegwande says is he doesn't want to be referred as somebody that lives with autism. And this is one thing that I've learned from him. He says, I do not live with autism. Mm-hmm. I am autistic. So I am born autistic. Mm-hmm. So when somebody is albino, we don't say they live with albinism. Mm-hmm. They are an albino. So he says, when you say somebody lives with, it means they acquired it along the way.
Oh.
So it's not part of them. Mm-mm. So it says autism is who I am.
Yes, and
so
it's don't different.
To me. Yes.
The only thing is I'm different. I'm autistic, and that is just a difference between you and I.
Yes, it says I am autistic. So don't refer to me as somebody that lives with autism. I don't live with autism. I am autistic. I'm born this way, and I'm going to live this way. This is who I am. Mm. So then I think it just brings the point home. Mm. For me, it brought the point home much easier to really understand who is this guy, where he does he come from, and so on. So hence he argues that autism doesn't bother him. He said, no, I don't want to be cured. I don't know anything else outside of autism. So if you were doing all of these things with the intention of curing me, I was scared. What do you want me to be?
Yes.
That I don't know, that I was not born with. You know.
Are you sure your son is 18? He sounds like, I don't know, a man with years and years and years of brilliance and wisdom and experience. It's a marvel to listen to. It's a marvel to hear.
I think I missed you a little bit. We are breaking, Susumpume.
I was saying, are you sure Uzegwande is 18? Because he sounds like an 80-year-old, wise, experienced, lived man.
Well, every year that he's turning, he equates it to the 10th of it. So he's 18 now. He's going for 80.
It makes sense. Because the things you are saying and the age I'm thinking about in my mind, chalk and cheese.
No. They are absolutely not compatible. I think the things that he says, they are really not compatible with his age. Mm. And how he just articulates himself, it really doesn't matter whether it's in a... Just a week ago, he was in UNISA, where he was invited as a self-advocate for autism. It was an international awareness and acceptance conference. Mm-hmm. He was part of the panel. And, I mean, the guy was talking in front of professors locally and internationally.
Imagine that.
And he was just himself. He's not bothered. You and I would have a stage fright, would have all these kind of things.
Yeah.
And he was just there, autistic as he is. Mm-hmm. He's given the opportunity. And the way just he starts his conversation, the maturity in there, how he adjusts to the audience and he plays into the gallery. So I'm learning a lot from him, to be honest with you. I'm really learning a lot from that young man. So, yeah, for his age, honestly, and the things that he says, the context, the environment, the audience, and so on, it's just out of this world.
Oh, man. As you're speaking, I'm thinking about a song that was written by, I think it's Mark Lowry, and it says, Mary, did you know? And it details, Mary, did you know that your baby boy would one day walk on water, would one day rule the nation, you know, all those things. And as I'm listening to you, that song is coming to mind. That Irene, did you know that this would be what your baby boy does?
I didn't at all. I didn't even expect. I honestly speaking, I didn't even expect. I think for me, the question that you raised earlier on about, the expectation versus the reality.
Yeah.
I got to a point where I thought, you know what, now that I've tried everything else and I'm realizing I'm not even winning the journey, perhaps what I should do is just to put, make sure that my son has got food every day to eat, because that's what I can do as a parent. Mm. But for him to come through and to articulate himself and to say who he is. Mm. And by the way, at some point I said to him, I'm going to write a book about my journey. And then he said to me, what are you going to write about? I said, no, I'm going to write as a parent. He says, okay, right. I want to read that book because it's my story. He said, it's my story to tell because we have never been autistic.
But you also have a story to tell as a parent of an autistic child.
Right. Go ahead, mom. Write it. I really want to read that book. But remember, who should tell the story here? So I'm the one who is autistic. It's not you who's autistic. And then for a moment, I thought like, oh, my God. So, yeah, no. So I never really expected. And hence, I'm always grateful to God. And I think, like I said, I've seen the goodness of God in the land of the living. If I leave this world and I said, Lord, you never revealed yourself.
Oh.
Lord, you never showed me who you are. Mm. And that child, I'll be lying. He has revealed himself in a very big way. He's still autistic, Zegwande. He doesn't talk. He doesn't speak. Mm. And he still shows signs of autism and so on. Mm. But you put him down. You have a conversation with him. Mm. Boy, he's just amazing. He's something else. Mm.
Can I give you a word of exhortation right now? You know, as I was thinking about the song, Mary, Did You Know? And hearing you earlier talk about you're 51 and you're wondering, Lord, what is my purpose? For Mary, it was to bring the Messiah into this world. And not just in an ordinary way of mom and dad get together. No, the Holy Spirit is going to get into you and you are going to bring a man that is going to save the world. And I'd love to believe that part of your purpose was bringing Uzegwande into this world. And here's why I believe so. You know, with some pregnancies, the doctors are able to detect from the very beginning that, listen, this is what we're noticing. Things are out of balance. Things are not okay. You have a choice. Do you want to terminate? And you're thinking about the quality of the child's life, the journey you'll have to walk. And some parents take that route because they just can't imagine themselves doing that or going through that journey. It was different with you. And yes, you found out later, but it was different with you. And I'm starting to believe part of your purpose, it may not be all of it, or it might be, I don't know, I'm not God, but it was actually bringing this young man into the world because God knew that he would be the one that does the work that other autistic kids may not even think to do with his courage, in his boldness, with his audacity, because it takes an audacious man, an audacious boy to say, listen, you are going to see me and everybody else like me differently. And I'm going to show you, not just say to you, but through my life, I'm going to show you why you need to take us seriously, because am I not serious right now? Am I not the best thing you've seen out there? So here's the comfort that I need you to know. In your questioning and in your wandering, he is part of the purpose. You are his mother.
Amen.
Sure. Let's Amen. End off on this note. If you could leave our listeners with one lasting truth about non-speaking autistics, something that would really challenge their assumptions and expand their empathy, what would it be?
I think over the years, I've learned that autism is a reality.
Yeah.
And somebody was talking about the statistics of autism lately. And I want to say, let us not question God's creation.
Oh, man.
And I think he is going to reveal, if we think that he has revealed himself in the bondage, he's going to reveal to us very soon what is his intention with his children and with this society.
Yeah.
We are almost there. I've got a feeling that... let us not question God. Let us not swim against the tide, and God will lead us. He will show us. He will really show us.
Sure, I'm so glad you left my listeners with that, and I have a message for them as well before I sign off with you. You know, there are conversations that change what you know, and then there are conversations that change how you see. And for me, this conversation was the latter. May Irene, you reminded us that love doesn't always come wrapped in language. That silence is not emptiness. That behind every misunderstood child is often just a world that hasn't learned how to listen.
Absolutely. And I just also want to say to parents, I think all of us, when we have kids, we have got dreams, yeah. We have got aspirations for our children.
Yeah.
If our children happen to be autistic, let's pursue whatever dream, whatever purpose, let's assist them. I think every child has got the capability of shining, of making it in life.
This is true.
If we believe in them, if we are there behind them, irrespective of disability, ability, and whatever. When they know that we are there, we believe in them, and we encourage and we love them, they will thrive, they will do well. Whether they are autistic or neurotypical, they are definitely going to do. So every parent, let's fulfill our responsibilities of parenting and loving our
children. And I just want to say, uzegwande, ubonga, uthato. And I'm just thinking about the kids that I know that are autistic. They're not a problem to be solved. They are people to be heard. And I love that through the work that the Zegwande Foundation is doing, more and more voices that were once trapped in silence are going to find their rhythm, their own expression, and their own liberation. And I just want to say to every parent who's ever felt alone on this journey, because it can be very isolating, to every child who's still waiting to be seen, and to every listener who's willing to learn and begin again, this is your invitation. I would really love for us to build a world where representation isn't just a trending topic. It is the bare minimum. At the very least, we are going to have representation. May Irene, thank you for sharing your heart, your journey, and the incredible work you and your son are doing through the Zegwande Foundation. Your courage to speak up for those whose voices are often silenced is nothing short of inspiring. You've made me want to meet Zegwande. You've made me want to interact with him and change the world with him. And I know for a fact that you've helped us see the power of listening and understanding in a whole new light. Thank you so much for showing us that love doesn't need to be felt. It just needs to be recognized. You've given us more than insights. You've given us a challenge to open our hearts, to open our minds to the ones who need us most. And I just want to say to you, please keep doing the life-changing work that you do. Please don't stop being the fire that, or the spark that keeps Zegwande's fire burning and alive. I know that it will burn brighter from here on. Thank you so much for being here today. Your story has really changed my life.
Thank you so much, Mpume, and God bless you and your listeners.
Oh man, I need to follow everywhere where you guys are so I can go and see this brilliance and this magic in action. And please greet your son for us and thank him for changing the world, because that is exactly what he is doing.
Thank you. Thank you so much, ma'am.
Thank you. Have a lovely evening.
Good evening. Thank you.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.